Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today is International Women's Day. The UN declared March 8th International Women's Day 3 decades ago. The goal was to provide an opportunity to reflect and confront issues affecting women. Women around the globe, from villages in India to the Gaza Strip, are marking this day with rallies, marches, teach-ins, and hunger strikes. Here in the U.S., women are organizing around the ongoing attacks on reproductive health. The Guttmacher Institute, which compiles statistics on reproductive health, reports that last year, states enacted a record number of abortion restrictions. They say that in the 50 states combined, legislators introduced more than 1,100 reproductive health and rights-related provisions, a sharp increase from 950 in 2010, and 68% of these new provisions restrict access to abortion services. Just yesterday, Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell signed a bill that requires women to have an ultrasound before having an abortion. On Saturday, 500 people rallied against the law on the Capitol steps in Richmond, Virginia, and they were met by cops wearing riot gear. 31 people were arrested. Democratic women senators in Georgia staged a walkout yesterday to protest 2 measures that would significantly limit access to abortion services and contraception. And then, of course, there's Rush Limbaugh. His comments about women struggling for access to contraception continue to shape the conversation about women's bodies and reproductive rights. At least 41 companies have pulled their ads from his radio show, and 2 radio stations have dropped the show altogether. So we are marking International Women's Day by talking about what we're facing, how are women responding, and how should women and people who believe in women's rights respond? Jody Jacobson is editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check, a website that offers news, analysis, commentary, and information on reproductive health issues. And she joins us from Washington. Hi, Jody. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Rose. Thanks so much.
Nice to have you. We're also joined by Catherine Grenier. She is director of the ACLU in Virginia. She's also with the Patricia M. Arnold Women's Rights Project. They combat gender bias in Virginia by protecting and advancing the equal rights of women through public education, advocacy, and litigation. Hi, Catherine. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you. And we're joined by Andrea Grimes. She's a freelance reporter in Texas focusing on women's issues and gender justice. She's written for a number of outlets, including Ms. Magazine and RH Reality Check. And Andrea joins us from Austin. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi there. Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So, Jody, when we thought about putting the show together a few weeks ago, we were initially going to bring on women from overseas. But with all of these laws being passed in our own backyard, we thought it was important to really focus on what's happening here in the U.S.
Yeah, well,
I think that speaks volumes about what we're facing right now.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that it's not an overstatement or in any way or really dramatic to say that there's, in fact, a war on women going on in the country. You know, you can focus on reproductive health bills, which obviously, as you articulated earlier, in virtually every state, there's somebody trying to limit women's reproductive health and their access to reproductive health care. And in many states, they've succeeded, in Texas and Georgia, in Kansas, Oklahoma, Alabama, South Dakota. I mean, you know, I could go on and on. All of these states are trying to limit, you know, not only access to abortion care, but access to basic reproductive health care, including the contraception that helps avoid unintended pregnancies. But there's also, you know, other issues going on, like cutting assistance for nutrition programs that assist low-income women and children, cutting other forms of assistance for people that are barely hanging on. And these things, because women overwhelmingly are represented in low-income populations, are really affecting women. So there is a war on women. There's a war on women's reproductive health, and there's a war on women basically being able to survive in a really awful economy. And I think what we've had recently is an almost, you know, I would say, oddly enough, an almost welcome rising to the surface of the true nature of what's going on through Rush Limbaugh, through some of these other things that have happened that have really broken it out and really made it clear to people that we're not just talking about, you know, people concerned about pro-life things, which, you know, one could debate, but really trying to put women back in their quote-unquote place.
And it's not just the rhetoric, right? Because we are seeing the laws being passed on a regular basis.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, we just had in Virginia, for example, and Catherine can speak to this, but, you know, Governor McDonald signed a forced ultrasound bill, a mandated ultrasound bill, for example. Andrea's written a terrific article for us on our reality check. In Michigan, we are going to publish an article tomorrow. There's, I think, 11 bills that are focused on reducing women's access to basic primary health care. There's been defeats even in places like Washington State, where efforts to move women's reproductive health access forward have been beaten back through other means by conservatives. So, yeah, I think that there's clearly an across-the-board movement here.
Well, let's go to Virginia. Catherine, describe what you're facing there. I saw the photos of a massive rally that took place on Saturday. Women, men, children were met by cops wearing riot gear, and 31 people were arrested. What are you facing right now in Virginia?
Virginia is certainly no exception to the increase in the number of anti-women's health and women's rights bills that we've seen across the country. This year, the legislators here introduced 13 anti-choice bills. That's an increase from 8 introduced last year. Neither number is something that we're, happy to see. And we're now facing a very serious and concerted effort by pro-choice organizations and activists who have taken up this cause and are taking a stand to say that the increase in the numbers of these bills, to introduce any of these bills at all, is not something that people will stand for.
And the ultrasound law was passed yesterday, and you actually fought against the original bill, and it was amended. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So with the original bill and the bill even as amended, lawmakers are proposing that a woman must make an additional medically unnecessary trip to her doctor's office 24 hours before an abortion procedure, solely for the purpose of coercing her into looking at an ultrasound image of the fetus. And so prior to the bill being amended, we had raised concerns about the fact that this is an intrusion into the doctor-patient relationship and the fact that this is a private decision made by a woman and her physician. And to mandate a medically unnecessary procedure is contravening her constitutional rights to privacy and liberty. The bodily integrity issue is the same whether this is a trans-abdominal ultrasound or if it's a transvaginal ultrasound, which is what got the most media attention. And while the governor ultimately recommended amending the bill to make the transvaginal ultrasound optional, the amendment proposed and accepted was really just a thinly veiled attempt to halt that national media scrutiny.
Jody, how many ultrasound laws are now on the books?
Let's see. I know that, help me out here, Catherine, because you probably have an updated...
I think it's 7.
There are, I think, was Virginia the 8th one?
Yes, there are 7 other states that mandate this requirement to have an ultrasound prior to receiving abortion care.
And Jody, how will this be enforced? That's what I don't get here.
Well, I think in different states it probably looks different. Like in Virginia, and again, this is where Catherine's expertise comes in, my understanding is that, you know, there's a provision in the law for physicians to be fined $2,500 if they're caught, quote-unquote, not adhering to the specifics of the bill. And what they have to do is, you know, prove that they've done this ultrasound, keep the image in the woman's file, have the woman sign off documents. You know, what I think it's sort of like akin to targeted regulation of abortion providers in that, you create all sorts of paperwork and all sorts of conditions that providers need to meet that are not medically necessary, and then you have another basis on which to harass them. In Texas, I'd prefer to have Andrea speak to how it's being enforced because, again, she's got the expertise there. But what it does, I think, is really drive a wedge between what a doctor's first obligation is, which is to their patient, and then secondly, raises both the cost and the time for women of getting an abortion. And I think really also to understand that the majority of abortions today are occurring before 12 weeks. 90% of abortions occur before 12 weeks, and a large share, well over 60%, occur around 8 weeks or earlier. And so what you've got is policies in place that actually push them later, make them more expensive and push them later. Does that make sense to anybody? I don't understand that myself.
Well, and let's go to Texas to find out what's happening there. There was a recent rally in Austin because the women's health program is going to lose federal funding as a result of the Texas legislature's decision to exclude Planned Parenthood from the state Medicaid program. Hundreds of people were at the state capitol recently. Give us an update and a snapshot of what's happening in Texas, Andrea. Andrea? Did we lose you?
Oh, no, here I am.
Okay.
Sorry. Texas really has two things happening right now. On the one hand, we have the forced transvaginal ultrasound. On the other hand, we're facing the loss of the women's health program. And really what has happened is the Texas legislators are using Planned Parenthood really as a kind of a scapegoat, as an excuse to deny millions and millions of dollars in federal funds to healthcare providers in Texas that need and use them to provide basic healthcare, well women screenings, breast cancer screenings, all that kind of thing. What they want to do is exclude Planned Parenthood very specifically from receiving any of these women's health program funds. But in doing that, they would actually also deny women's health program funds to a host of other providers that are, like Planned Parenthood, not abortion providers. Planned Parenthood, of course, separates its abortion-providing arm from its healthcare, traditional women's healthcare providing arm. So the WHP can be defunded in Texas as soon as March 14th. So right now, we're talking about, I think at this point, 130,000 Texas women who will be losing access to affordable reproductive health care in a week, more or less. So there's a lot of activism going on right now. There's a bus tour that's kind of going across Texas. It's called Don't Mess with Texas Women, really kind of trying to drum up public support, public outrage, to try and hopefully convince these very conservative legislators here in Texas that, it's not worth, throwing women under the bus just to prove some kind of point about Planned Parenthood.
Today we are marking International Women's Day by talking about what we're facing here at home and how women and their supporters are organizing around these ongoing attacks. What are your thoughts on this? How should women respond to what we're facing right now? I was just reading these articles about marches in Virginia and Texas, and they quoted people who said they've never been involved before, but they're so fed up that they're taking to the streets. And we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. There was a rally yesterday in San Francisco. What is happening in your community? We'll also talk about what's going on in the state of California. 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. So what about that, Jody? It has been incredible to see so much organizing around this. I mean, if you go to Google and type in reproductive health or abortion and protests, and you're getting things happening on a regular basis, almost daily.
Right. And you know what? I think this goes to the point I was trying to make earlier, which someone asked me a while ago for a Washington Post story, you know, whether I was horrified or how I felt about, you know, all of the presidential candidates talking about how they might ban contraception. And I said, I'm sort of relieved because this is out in the open. And what I think it is happening is that people are becoming aware. It's no longer somebody else's problem. When it becomes, like happened in Mississippi with the personhood law, when people wake up to the fact that it's going to affect them, their daughters, their sisters, their aunts, uncles, neighbors, or neighbors, not their uncles, but, you know, the people that they care about, it becomes a more personalized issue and they become more galvanized. And I think with this, you know, considerable overreach, not that I think any of these laws are okay, and, you know, if they reached a little less, but the considerable overreach has, I think, really made clear to people that this is an attack on women. It can be dressed up in whatever religious liberty or other things you want to do, but it is an attack on women. And without even debating the motivations, that is the outcome. And what I hope, what I think, you know, we should take the opportunity to do is more of what we're doing now. Get more women out on the streets to the state capitals. Get them, you know, visiting their state reps in their hometowns. Get them, you know, out there. Put up more and more of these bills. You know, there are bills out there, for example, the Every Sperm is Sacred bill, and the men can't have a, you know, vasectomy until they, you know, unless it's a life-threatening condition bill. I mean, these sound, you know, they are funny, and they serve a purpose in being funny, but they're also, in a way, they're only so funny as they tell you how absurd some of this other legislation is. And finally, I think we should take the opportunity right now to write a bill in every state capital to get a sense, to force a vote on the sense of the Congress in every state capital and in the U.S. Congress as to whether women have a right to determine when and with whom they have children. Mm. Because I think if you forced a vote on those things and you made people stand up to whether or not they believe in forced pregnancy, that would really make for some interesting, you know, perspectives on what's going on.
Well, let's go to a few callers. Let's hear from Jason in Salinas. Hi, Jason. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. So I'm actually a college instructor, and in one of my classes, we were just talking about some of these current event issues surrounding different women's rights and this whole situation. And what I found striking was that the young ladies in the class really get it, but the young men really were sort of tuned out, and I had to really work to relate it. And most of the legislators, most of the decision makers in these states that we are talking about are men, and we're talking a lot about getting women out, but what efforts are there to educate men so that there's an empathy and an understanding from the male perspective of what this really means for women?
It's a great question. And Jason, I'm just curious, what did your male students say? What do they think about this?
Yeah, so initially, like I said, they're sort of just checked out, like, oh, it's a girl issue sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then we started talking about some of the bigger picture issues and some of the ramifications and relating it more to, you know, if this was your sister, somebody, your daughter, you know, then the conversation started really brewing, and the females in the class sort of gave their perspective, and the men slowly came around. But I was just shocked at how disconnected most of the young men were immediately as soon as we were bringing up women's issues.
It's a great question, and thank you for that story. Andrea, what are your thoughts on this? How should you talk to young men about these issues?
Well, I think right now, sexually active women have a really great opportunity to open up the conversation about the sex that they're actually having with their partners. For so long, we have seen contraception and maybe that kind of thing as being a woman's responsibility, wholly on the woman. You know, a guy might carry a condom around, but really it's the woman's problem to make sure that she doesn't conceive an unwanted child. So if women can take the initiative and tell these men, you know, don't make contraception a mystery. Don't act like you're doing something shameful. Don't try to be secretive. You know, take your pill in front of him. Tell him you've got to put a condom on, you know, to show him this is where I keep the condoms. I just think a more open conversation between partners that demonstrates for men the lengths that women go to prevent unwanted pregnancy would really give men more of an idea of just kind of what a hassle it can be. And if women had more motivated, interested, engaged partners on this subject, I think everybody would be having better sex and people would be much, much healthier in terms of STDs, in terms of contraception, preventing unwanted pregnancies. You know, I just think it's a conversation that needs to be more out in the open.
And what would you add to that, Catherine?
Well, here in Virginia, we saw the main demonstrations and the largest demonstrations being organized by offshoots of the Occupy Richmond activist group. And what I was encouraged to see there is that conversations were had between activists who had originally been focused on one issue area about economic inequality, and that spread to discussions about women's inequality, and there's certainly obvious ties between the discussion about economic justice and justice for women. So those are natural allies. And in that, women activists were able to pull in their male counterparts or perhaps other women who had maybe not been as educated on those issues to get a strong focus during this General Assembly session. So I think I would echo the comments previously made that more education needs to be done on these topics. And in that, you'll be able to pull in both men and others who may not have taken up this cause before. That's certainly what we saw happen here in Virginia.
And Jody?
Well, I think we have to underscore, you know, for every unintended pregnancy, there's a partner involved. Mm-hmm. And that women are, you know, in addition to what everyone has also said, which I think are excellent points, women economically are shouldering the burden of contraception for two people, and the burden of an unintended pregnancy falls at least on two people, and then, you know, economically on other people. And so I just think that, you know, we're this, again, as both Andrea and Catherine have said, is overdue conversation, because while it's put out there as women wanting contraception, it's women protecting themselves and their partners. And I think that those are very important messages that we could be doing a better job getting out there.
And when we're talking about organizing and activism on the ground, what are you seeing in terms of politicians? I mean, we should say this is not just men. There are also women voting for these bills. But you also have women who are really taking a stand. For example, Democratic women senators in Georgia walked out yesterday to protest two measures that would significantly limit access to abortion services and contraception. What else are you seeing that we might not be hearing about, Jody?
In addition to the restrictions on abortion and contraception?
Just in terms of how are women politicians standing up to this? Because we just rarely hear from them in the media.
I think increasingly they are. I mean, you know, we've seen again in Georgia, now in Alabama today, there's a march on the state capitol. Women politicians there are not standing down. They, you know, this is interesting. The guy who was the original main co-sponsor of the transvaginal forced ultrasound bill happens to be the president of an ultrasound company.
Oh.
So, you know, what we learned yesterday.
Well, you know, I'm sorry to cut you off, Jody.
Yeah.
Hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break, and you can join us at 866-798-8255. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW San Francisco. Our email newsletter is a great way to keep up to date with local public radio as well as the latest developments in non-commercial media. Every week or two, you get an email from us with updates on KALW programming and public events as well as the occasional free ticket offer. It's easy to sign up. Just click on the e-newsletter link at kalw.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. You can find more information about our show at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up. Tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. We'll be discussing coverage of the recent education rally in Sacramento, where over mostly 70 students were arrested. We'll also discuss coverage of AIPAC's gathering in Washington, D.C., and the drumbeat for war with Iran. On Monday, we'll have a conversation about how you cope with tragedy and loss, and how therapeutic is it to tell your story. We'll be joined by our very own Marilyn Pittman about It's All the Rage, a one-woman show about her parents' murder-suicide, and it kicks off tonight at The Marsh. You can find information about the one-woman show. Hopefully you can see it before we have her on. I'm going tonight. The Marsh, you can check it out at their website. Today we are talking about International Women's Day. The UN declared International Women's Day on March 8th, 3 decades ago, to provide an opportunity for women to really reflect and confront issues they're facing. And I was just checking Twitter's feed for Women's Day, and there's so many activities going around all around the globe. I mean, there's just tweets here from South Africa and Mexico and Peru and Russia. It's just there are things happening all over the world. And there's a lot going on, obviously, here in the U.S. Women are organizing around the ongoing attacks on reproductive health. You can find a number of articles at our website, yourcallradio.org. For example, Michigan legislature passes partial birth abortion ban. Nevada moves ahead with prenatal protection amendments. Utah okays 72-hour waiting period for abortion. Abortion notification bill clears the Colorado Senate. The Mississippi State GOP pushes for, quote, abortion-free Mississippi. So there's a lot going on in the United States. How do you think people who care about these issues should be responding? There's a lot of organizing happening around the country. What really concerns you? What is most effective? I know we ask these questions a lot, but we have to keep having these conversations. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. What kind of activism really inspires you? What do you think is effective? And what do you make of the trend of this legislation that we're seeing restricting women's reproductive health? 866-798-8255. And we had a call earlier from a teacher, Jason, who said, how should we talk about these issues to boys and men? If you have any thoughts on that, we'd love to hear from you. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Catherine Grenier is director of the ACLU's Virginia Patricia M. Arnold Women's Rights Project. Andrea Grimes is a freelance reporter in Texas focusing on women's issues and gender justice. And Jody Jacobson is editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check, a website that offers news about these issues. And Jody, before the break, you were talking about what we're seeing, what you're seeing around the country that's not really getting the attention it deserves.
Yeah, I think that, you know, clearly women who are accountable to women, let me put it that way, because there are women in the conservative movement who I don't think are accountable to women. Women representatives who are accountable to women and who understand the needs, the health needs and other needs of women, are taking action in these different states. And I think there, some of them are doing so courageously because there aren't a lot of them to band together with. And I think one thing we all need to be doing is finding those women, and whether we can send them, you know, money to help with their campaigns or send them just a thank you note, no matter what state you live in, I think giving them support in the places like Georgia, Alabama, and elsewhere where women legislators are standing up. But, you know, I also want to point to one other thing, which is the Democratic Party's abysmal record, really, of getting women elected. Just this week in Maine, we saw Shelley Pingree pull out of the race for Senate of, you know, the Maine seat opened by Olympia Snowe. And she did that because she didn't want to set up a three-way race with Angus King, who's another much more conservative-leaning so-called independent in Maine. And, you know, I really wondered where the Democratic Party was there in whether or not they were in there pressuring Angus King not to run so that they could give a space to Shelley Pingree, who has widespread national support, not to mention high popularity in Maine, and is very much a progressive. These are the kinds of women we need in, for example, the U.S. Senate, where people like Tim Kaine and Bob Casey continue to help the far right turn back women's rights. And so I think it's a big problem that we don't have enough pro-choice, progressive women in either the state or the national legislature.
And since you brought that up, Marcy Kaptur won in Ohio yesterday against Dennis Kucinich.
Right.
And I heard a number of interviews about this, and not one person mentioned that Marcy Kaptur is anti-choice.
She's anti-choice.
She voted for the Stupak Amendment.
Yep.
So a lot of people are wondering, where are the Democrats on this? On the issue of all, you know, of choice and the attacks on reproductive health?
Are you asking me? Or
yes. What would you say about
that? Well, you know, right now on the contraceptive thing, they've done the polling and they see that it's very much an issue that they need to protect because, you know, let's be clear, the administration did do the right thing with the contraceptive mandate. It finally did do the right thing. But I do think that the inability to set the stage and talk about this issue and make it a clear, unequivocal issue from the beginning of the Obama presidency was naivete and a mistake because we have fought this debate ever since the stimulus bill and not at no point until very late in the game after the contraceptive mandate blew up recently did the administration even begin to articulate the fact that contraception is a public health issue, contraception is an economic issue. And so until this time, we've kind of lost a lot of ground. And I think that the Democrats still have a way to go. For sure, people like Nancy Pelosi and others have been, you know, unwavering. But as a whole, the party is still dominated by men who are not really very comfortable talking about this issue and not very well educated on it.
We have an email from a listener who says, what do your guests think about the fact that on the one hand, conservatives excoriate poor minority women for having, quote, too many babies or babies out of wedlock that conservatives say the rest of us have to end up supporting, but then on the other hand, now excoriate women for wanting access to contraceptives and other reproductive rights under private or government insurance plans, let alone opposing sex ed in the schools that would prevent a lot of unintended pregnancies? And we actually recently just did a show about how difficult it is for women and girls and boys to get sex education in school. How would you address that, Andrea?
You know, I would say if you really look at the reasoning, that the true reasoning, in my opinion, behind conservative viewpoints is that women don't deserve reproductive say-so over their own bodies. So it's not contradictory to say that, you know, women shouldn't have access to good sex ed and that they shouldn't have access to contraception and that they're having too many babies if fundamentally what you believe is that women aren't people. All of those beliefs are completely consistent with each other. And I think that is the underlying belief in most legislation and in most of the things that conservative pundits and commentators say. So, you know, one of the things that you do see, for example, there was a panic here in Texas about the HPV vaccine when that was recommended for young girls. Everybody freaked out because nobody wants to think about their children growing up and having a future as a sexual being and preventing, you know, things that may happen down the line. There's a real panic around girls specifically and keeping girls kind of pure and perfect, particularly in the South, where there's a lot of talk about purity and virginity, true love waits, that kind of thing. So I think it all kind of plays in together. That is kind of just a low-level panic that pervades conservative ideas about sex.
And what are your thoughts on this, Catherine, and just the response? Because you do have to point to Mississippi, where the personhood amendment didn't pass. And then look at what happened in South Dakota a couple years ago. There was so much organizing around their anti-choice bills, although last year the South Dakota legislature passed a law requiring women seeking abortions to wait 72 hours and undergo counseling at these so-called pregnancy help centers that discourage abortions.
Well, I would just echo the sentiments that I think the debate that's raging about these anti-reproductive rights measures is so solely about women's autonomy, women's ability to have control over their own decision-making and what happens to their bodies. This is about bodily integrity. And I think also speaking about the debate over personhood in other states, I would just add that that's also an issue that we face here in Virginia. And when activists and organizations here started talking about how the bill would not just affect access to abortion, it would also affect access to contraception and could have a host of other very grave consequences, is when more and more people started to take notice and stand against the issue. And so I think that the more that we call attention to the fact that this is not just about abortion opponents seeking to restrict a woman's right to choose to terminate her pregnancy, this is about a host of all of the attempts to control women's reproductive decision-making, the more that we see people speaking out against it, which is exactly what we need.
And that is Andrea Grimes. She's a freelance reporter in Texas focusing on women's issues. Catherine Grenier is director of the ACLU's Patricia M. Arnold Women's Project in Virginia. And Jody Jacobson is editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check. And today we are marking International Women's Day by talking about what's happening in the U.S. and how women are organizing, women and men are organizing around the ongoing attacks on reproductive health. And if you'd like to call in to talk about what's going on in your area or what your thoughts are about this, you know, I guess, Jody, the struggle here is that we do these shows on a regular basis, and I really struggle to find kind of a new angle or a different question to ask. And I wonder if listeners kind of scratch their head thinking, where do I fit in all of this? Because we've been talking about this for years, and it just seems that there are more laws piling up on each other.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think it's incumbent upon all of us to pay more attention in the state, in our own states, to what's going on, because we've, you know, I think it's kind of easy. It's very easy. I do it all the time, to get caught up in our daily lives. And, you know, people are struggling for jobs and other things. But what is your state legislature doing if they're basically, you know, trying to turn the clock back over 100 years rather than looking at what kinds of economic and other issues they should be addressing and the issue of job creation and so forth? What is your state legislature doing if they're spending between 30 and 70% of their time passing bills? I mean, these are actual numbers from actual states. 30 to 70% of the state legislative time passing bills to restrict abortion. It's absurd. And, you know, the other thing I want to just underscore here is that this is not kind of like, gee, what a coincidence that all these things are popping up all over. There's a concerted effort with using model legislation funded by Americans United for Life to take this legislation, and recently a sort of mapping of the language in all this legislation was done by a colleague organization, Sunlight Foundation, and they found that all the legislation has such an, you know, incredible similarity because it all stems from this model legislation from Americans United for Life. And Americans United for Life is not surprisingly linked through some other groups to the Koch brothers and the ALEC, I forget what the acronym stands
American
for.
Legislative Exchange Council.
Exactly, which also has lots of quote-unquote model legislation to support corporations. And what was found, at least as a sort of next step investigation, is how many of these anti-choice bills are being passed because, like in Alabama, where the guy owns an ultrasound company, are they being passed in order to benefit somebody economically? So in other words, coercing women, not for some, you know, not that there's a principle upon which you can coerce women, but you know what I'm saying? Not because they come from some lofty, you know, moral high ground that they perceive, but rather because they're going to sell more ultrasound equipment.
And who's writing about this? I'd love to read a story connecting these dots. I haven't heard this before.
Well, we're just finding out that the dots are there to be connected. I mean, literally yesterday I saw, and I think probably Andrea may have seen this piece from Sunlight Foundation, which I'm just now trying to follow up on myself to see how much further can we take this. But, you know, we've seen, for example, that with the Rush Limbaugh thing, you know, Clear Channel, which is owned by Bain Capital, which
right.
is connected to Mitt Romney, he would not say anything against what Rush Limbaugh had said.
Mm-hmm.
Liberty Media, which owns the group ProFlowers, which it took the corporation ProFlowers, which it took us a long time to get to dump Rush, at least, you know, temporarily. They are owned by Liberty Media, which is connected to ALEC. All of these things are connected financially and otherwise.
Wow.
And I think we have to start to look beyond the sort of tunnels to see this movement.
Follow the money. At my last count, two shows dropped Rush Limbaugh's, or two stations dropped his show, and 41 companies have pulled their ads. Has it gone up since then?
As of this morning, I don't know that there are more. There may well be more. I just haven't been paying attention
okay.
to the number.
And I also want to mention, he did make 53 incendiary comments. I read them all. Just a few have been publicized, but they're beyond horrific. I won't even mention them on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, we have just over 10 minutes left, and I'd really love to hear listeners on this. What should the strategies be? There has to be creativity here. What do you think actually works? And having this conversation is really important, but what should really happen on the streets and in conversations with people who might not know what's going on? In fact, a lot of women don't even know. On my Facebook page this morning, people said, what? I haven't heard about these ultrasound laws. This is appalling. I can't believe this is going on. I haven't been able to keep up. So what is the response to this? We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from Sasha in San Francisco. Hi, Sasha.
Hi. I was wondering if maybe part of one of the strategies is to frame the debate differently. And by that, I mean, in this country, abortion and reproductive rights in general have been really closely tied to women's rights, and I'm not sure that that's the winning argument. Mm-hmm. I met a woman some time back who was actually working with abortion rights in Marrakesh, and one of the things that she said that was really productive there was to frame it as a family issue and as a health issue. And as such, they were able to get some of the really, really fundamental leadership on board with protecting the family. And if you kind of look at it that way, and she was saying that that was the way that they were actually getting some of the things changed there. So I'm wondering if there's a way, because I feel like women's rights isn't really the thing that people can really rally around as a country, and which is too bad. Which is too bad. That's a problem. But she just was having so much. They were having so much success, and she was talking about that. And she was talking about looking at other countries that also legalized abortion about the time that the United States did.
Mm.
But they were. It was not tied to women's to the women's rights movement. And she thought that that might be part of why other countries aren't having the same backlash that we're having.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah, and so it really changed to kind of open my mind to maybe a different idea, because I'd always been like, it's a woman's body, it's a women's thing. And she said what they had done was said, look, this affects a family. It affects a woman's ability to have future children if she has a legal abortion. Mm. You know, and so it really made a difference there.
Yeah, well, yeah, I would love to hear from women overseas, actually, on that. That would be a great show. Catherine, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that that's something that we have seen as successful here in Virginia and certainly in other states as well, a reframing of the debate. I'm thinking specifically to the bill that was passed last session that places new unnecessary and burdensome regulations on facilities that provide first trimester abortion care. And what we have been focusing on there is that medical professionals had convened in a panel to advise our Virginia Board of Health about what would be the appropriate regulations. And they had made recommendations that the Attorney General's office then stepped in to reject. And the medical professionals speaking from a health aspect, and, you know, as opposed to we're all, of course, concerned with the women's rights angle and perspective, but having that fresh voice, I think is a need and something that people respond to. Ultimately, like I said, unfortunately, the AG's office stepped in to reject those recommendations, but I think that showcases the absurdity of these regulations, that a medical professional would make a recommendation and then the AG's office, who is not a medical professional, would reject them.
Well, and I'd love to get more comments on that, but we have a few more calls and I want to get them in before we have to end. Let's hear from Dora in San Francisco. Hi, Dora.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thank you.
What I don't see and what I would like to see is more young women getting involved. It seems to be that in some ways they take reproductive rights for granted, something that is settled. And so, personally, I'm really glad to see this uproar that's happening. First, with what happened with the Susan G. Komen Foundation, and now what's going on with Rush Limbaugh, because maybe that will get young women to understand that their reproductive health is at, you know, is at issue because of a bunch of men who really truly want to control their choices. I don't know how we get social media. Twitter.
Yeah, well, social media was behind the Komen controversy, and then this Rush Limbaugh campaign to get advertisers to pull from their show, that was mostly all social media. So,
right. So are younger women getting on board? It just seems to me that, you know, I'm a 50-year-old postmenopausal woman. When I turn up at reproductive rights rallies, I see a lot of women who look like me.
Well, I saw in Virginia, Catherine, when I saw those photos on Saturday where 31 women and men were arrested, I saw a lot of young women there.
I think certainly in Virginia and, you know, in the national context as well, we have seen so many young women organizing around this issue, young men as well. I think that there might be a difference in the tactics and approaches that young folks have been exposed to, that they're working on these issues with. So I don't know if that explains why there might be a difference in attendance at different types of events. But definitely here in Virginia, this effort has really, in terms of the demonstrations, been driven by young people.
And are you seeing more young people get involved in Texas, Andrea?
Oh, absolutely. I mentioned earlier the Don't Mess with Texas Women bus tour that's kind of traveling across the state right now. They stopped here in Austin yesterday, right on the campus of University of Texas, and we had young men holding up signs, you know, trying to get people to sign petitions. We had young women, you know, writing on whiteboards, you know, don't take away my reproductive care. And after the protest, I even happened onto a group of young women at the bar across the street, just livid about what they had recently learned, just walking down the street and really having great engaged conversations. I couldn't help but listen to them and just kind of sharing with each other, oh, I didn't know you had an abortion. I didn't know that this affected you. Did you know that this affected me in this way? Young women are absolutely out there talking about this, you know, in person and also through social media. Facebook and Twitter in Texas, I know, is a fire with reproductive health-related hashtags and sharing stories. So young women in Texas are definitely mobilized on this.
And Jody, what would you like to add about that? Do you have any stories to share about young women getting involved or conversations you've heard?
I think that young women are very heavily involved, and I think they're very heavily involved in many different areas. For example, let's look at what's happened recently. Not only is Sandra Fluke a young woman, she's a young legal student who's been part of, for example, Law Students for Reproductive Justice, which not only has been involved in the Georgetown issue, which brought her to national fame and, unfortunately, in the crosshairs of Rush Limbaugh. But, you know, at Fordham University, for example, it was students that challenged the university around their contraceptive rule. Many of the women that I work with, and I can no longer claim to be, quote, a young woman, many of the women I work with and learn from every day are young women who are really powering this movement forward. I think, you know, it may be, for example, that at a given rally, because it's happening during school or it's happening during work hours, that not so many young people come out because of the, you know, timing. But I think if we look across the board, young people are very engaged and, in fact, I think are really going to be the tidal wave that sweeps these people away finally.
And I wanted to read one last email. Thank you for this most important discussion. Until we have an open and honest discussion as to where this attack is coming from and why, nothing will be accomplished. Patriarchy still rules. Until this truth is acknowledged and openly discussed, we will go nowhere. And we have another email who says we might not know exactly what works right now, but we still have to continue having this discussion. So thank you all for joining us. Jody Jacobson, editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check, Catherine Grenier, director of the ACLU's Patricia M. Arnold Women's Rights Project, and Andrea Grimes, reporter in Texas who focuses on women's issues and gender justice. Thank you all, and happy International Women's Day.
Thanks so much, Rose.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you, and thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of the recent education rally in Sacramento, where over 70 mostly students were arrested. We'll also focus on AIPAC's gathering in Washington, D.C., and the drumbeat for war with Iran. We'll be joined by citizen journalist Spencer Mills, the Contra Costa Times' Matt Krupnik, and the Middle East Report's Chris Tozing. Join us at 10 or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. What was your story of the week? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihei Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Pete Misick is our web editor. And Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Alan Farley is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.